Case Closed, Crime Stories from the Golden Age of Radio. This is Case Closed. Welcome back. Thanks for joining me again this Wednesday. We'll hear first this week from Crime and Peter Chambers. An episode titled Joan Bradley first aired April 27th, 1954. And it's more from yours truly, Johnny Dollar. We're going to hear more of the five-part serialized stories this month, beginning today with the first two episodes of the Alvin Summers Matter. They aired October 24th and October 25th of 1955.
Crime and Peter Chambers. Created by Henry King, transcribed and starring Dane Clark. A private investigator, duly licensed and duly sworn. Peter Chambers.
You're a private eye. That's your business. Anything else? That's for laughs. It's one of those dark brown nights, dirty with rain. You're home and you're doing calisthenics with a scotch bottle. It isn't so much that you enjoy a drink, but after all, you're a private eye. You might get waved out of the league if you didn't keep in practice. You're contemplating a warm shower and an early go-to-bed when... Hello?
Mr. Chambers. Peter Chambers.
At your service, ma'am, if it's service you want.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm so glad I was able to reach you.
Well, I'm glad you're glad, lady. What is it, please?
My name is Doyle. Mary Doyle. I own a rooming house at 801 West 53rd.
That's quite near.
Perhaps 10 minutes from where you are. Now, look, Mr. Chambers, it's kind of a bodyguard job for tonight.
Tonight? Oh, lady, it's murder tonight. It's pouring rain.
I know it, sir, but it's kind of an emergency, sir.
Better be.
$100,000 in cash. She's got $100,000 up there. Oh.
Hello. Hello. Fine night to be making a house call, but emergency, the lady said, and it certainly sounded like the emergency had bust wide open. So, you're fighting the rain, making tracks for a rooming house at 801 West 53rd. And then you're there. And you shove at the buzzer. And you get no answer. And you turn the knob, and you're inside. Inside is a spacious downstairs room. Flight of steps going up. There's a phone on a corner table and its receiver is dangling. And there's a lady seated in front of it. About 40, red-haired, buxom, quite attractive if you're thinking in large terms. She's wearing silk lounging pajamas with shoes to match, and she's out like the proverbial light. You go to her quickly and you slap her back to life. All
no,
right, there.
No,
come on,
stop.
Come on.
Stop.
Easy does it, lady. You coming around now?
Oh.
All right?
Yeah. Oh, somebody slugged me, but good.
Miss Doyle? Or is it Miss Doyle?
Yeah, Miss Doyle. You, who are you? What are you doing here? Who are you?
Peter Chambers. You were talking to me on the phone.
Oh, good. Look, I'll be with you in a moment.
Wait
Please
a minute.
Don't go
hey.
Away.
Here's a new gimmick. You find an unconscious woman, and when you bring her around, she shoots off like a rocket, come Mardi Gras. Well, screams to a private detective are like spurs to a racehorse. You fly up the stairs, and you find Mary Doyle in a room with an open door. And there's a lady on the floor, quite rigid. And near her, a small instrument of large consequence, a nickel-plated revolver.
Dead. She's dead. They shot her. There's the gun.
Don't touch that.
But the gun.
Just leave that lie. Now, what's all this about?
Just a minute.
Well, what are you looking for now?
Little black bag.
Little black bag? What's that got to do with this whole...
There's $100,000 in it, cash money. And it's gone.
Look, one thing at a time, lady. Who's the corpus delicti?
Al Gaudino.
And who that?
An opera singer. from Italy. She was here in this country for a year.
Oh, Algadino. Oh, great soprano. What was she doing here?
She didn't like hotels. I run a very correct theatrical boarding house here. The best.
Algadino.
We were good friends.
Look, you better go downstairs and call the cops, and you and I, we'll pick it up after that.
All right. All right, sir. Whatever you say.
So now you go for the gun, only you lift it with a pinky through the trigger guard. But all your careful care is wasted because there's an interruption slightly from mayhem, and the mayhem is directed at you.
Get it off. All right, people. You still got the gun. You got me with my hands up in the air. So what's our next move?
What are you doing here? What kind of a boarding house is this anyway?
Well, let me tell you. I'm sure I can come up with a good answer if I think about it.
And now you get another interruption. But this one's of the opposite gender. She stands in the doorway, blue-eyed, red-lipped, blonde and statuesque. And you'd be wildly interested if it weren't for a slight matter of murder.
You with a gun... What's between you and Mr. Brown?
Who, wants to know?
My name is Joan Bradley.
Well, I do a low bow, Miss Bradley, except I've got to keep the gun pointed at our friend here.
At Mr. Brown?
Oh, Mr. Brown to you, maybe. Bill Cragg to me, a hood from Louisiana hiding out from a grand jury investigation.
Mr. Brown?
Just a little misunderstanding.
Never mind him. Now, take a look at this, miss.
Olga. Olga Dino.
Very dead. And very murdered.
No.
You live here?
Yes, sir.
What do you do?
I'm a lady magician.
Who else lives here?
Mr. Brown, Olga, Ralph Hardwood, me, and Miss Doyle.
That all in the entire house?
It's being renovated.
Well, that's all she could accommodate at this time.
Okay. Now, my name is Peter Chambers, and right now I'm in charge here.
Yes, Mr. Chambers.
Is Ralph Hardwood at home?
Yes, he is.
All right, then, my dear lady magician. A favor, please.
Yes?
Make yourself disappear. And tell Mr. Hardwood to stay in his room, and you stay in yours. We'll come to you in due course.
All right, sir, if you say so.
And now you're alone again with a corpse and Mr. Bill Cragg sporting around under the name of Brown in a theatrical boarding house in New York. Bill Cragg, tall, rugged, shrewd, and rotten as a wormy apple.
Any questions, Paper?
Oh, a lot of them, pal.
Well, as you know, I'm hiding out from a little heat in New Orleans. So I'm here as Bill Brown, retired actor. That's a crime?
I don't know. Maybe it ain't. But what's with jumping me and tussling for that gun?
Simple. It's my gun.
Hey, that's a pretty frantic admission for a wise guy. That figures to be the heater that deheated our lady here.
I got the same figure.
So?
It's my gun, period. Took a look at my suitcase a couple of minutes ago. My gun was lifted. And I'm coming down past this open door, see the dead dame, see you with a gun, and it begins to add. Maybe I lost my head. But I can't use trouble, brother. And how I can't use trouble.
Where were you this evening?
Took in a movie. Lousy one. Cops and robbers.
When'd you get back?
About a half an hour ago. Ask Miss Doyle. I called down for coffee maybe 5 minutes after I got in.
You know anything about a little black bag?
Yeah, sure.
Know what was in it?
100,000 cash bucks.
How do you know?
Everybody in this house knows.
Look, Bill, you didn't kill this dame, did you?
No. But I got a hunch that whoever did used my gun to make it look like I did.
Joan Bradley, did she know about that little black bag?
I told you, everybody knows.
What am I wasting my time with you for? I can get the same information and she's prettier.
It's your time, Peeper.
You get Bill Cragg back to his room, admonish him that a run-out powder would be a clean admission of guilt, and then you mosey along to Miss Joan Bradley, who keeps growing on you by leaps and bounds.
Come in, Mr. Chambers. Make yourself at home.
Hey, you're awfully pretty. I wish I had the time.
Oh, so do I.
Really?
Well, you're sort of
pretty yourself.
Well, let's make a date then.
For when?
As soon as this thing is over.
Oh, you twisted my arm, Mr. Chambers. I sort of like the way you twist arms.
Okay, then. Let's get back to cases. What's with the little black bag?
Oh, well, we were talking about it at dinner today, all of us.
Where?
Here, downstairs. Miss Doyle was serving.
All right, let's have it, huh?
Well, it begins with Algadino. Fine, sweet woman.
About how old?
Oh, about 45. She had $100,000 in a vault, and tomorrow morning at 9, she was taking the ship to return to Italy. They were going to be married on board
ship. They? Who's the they?
Olga and Ralph Hardwood.
Same guy that lives here?
Yeah, they met here. Young English actor.
So?
So, she drew the money out of the vault today. She was taking it with her, and she had it in that little black bag.
Everybody in the house knew about it?
Oh, that was Olga, sweet and trusting. That was the way she was. Never had a bad word for anybody, never a bad thought. She felt that the money was just as safe here as in the bank vault, but Mary, Miss Doyle, kept after her all day.
Kept after her how?
Well, Mary Doyle insisted that Olga hire somebody, sort of a custodian, bodyguard, somebody properly trained and equipped to act as custodian until tomorrow morning when they got to the ship. She kept after her all day.
And by nighttime, she probably convinced her.
Meaning what?
Meaning me.
I don't understand.
It'll be explained to you. There'll be lots of cops here Pete. Shortly. Uh-huh.
Pete Chambers, come on down here.
Downstairs, the place is crawling with cops. Detective Lieutenant Louis Parker, friend and gentleman, is in charge. Louis is involved in the interrogation of Miss Mary Doyle and a fine-looking young man who turns out to be Ralph Harwood. You turn the gun over to Louis, and you bring him up to date on your end of the affair, and then he returns to his questioning.
Well, two things we got established definitely. The dame is dead, and that bag of loot ain't in the house. That's definite. Now you, Hardwood.
Yes, Lieutenant.
That Algadino was 15 years older than you. Was it love or was it money?
Love, Lieutenant.
With the dame 15 years older than you?
Oh, she was younger than any of us, Lieutenant.
All right, with the Lieutenant. Let's not make with the metaphors, huh? Were you out of the house tonight?
Yes, Lieutenant. I was visiting my sister. Got back about 3/4 of an hour ago.
After the rain started?
Yes, sir, after the rain started.
Miss Doyle?
Yes, Lieutenant.
What about that Joan Bradley? Was she out too?
She was at a rehearsal. She returned about 15 minutes before I called Mr. Chambers.
Everybody was out in the rain tonight, huh?
Except me. Mm.
You're sure there were no strangers around here?
Very sure. I wasn't out of the house for a minute.
Cassidy, get the rest of them down here. Soon the whole quorum will be gathered. Pete, come over here. You and me alone. So, what do you make of it?
I don't make a thing yet, Lieutenant.
Crazy artists carrying their loot in a bag, begging to get knocked off.
It figures that Bill Cragg's gun was a weapon.
Oh, I'm sure of that. 3 bullets out of the gun, 3 in the dame, but he's already produced a license for it, so don't give us no office to hold him. Yet.
You think he'd kill for 100 G's? You know, he's pretty much of a big shot.
Never tell with them. Any of them.
Well, how do you make it?
Well, the facts we've got, Mary Doyle is calling you. But somebody doesn't want a bodyguard around. So she gets conked on the cranium, put out of commission. Then that Olga gets knocked off and the bag of loot is stolen. Gets taken out of the house. Our murderer returns before Miss Doyle recovers consciousness, joins the rest of the boys and the girls.
Yep.
Then you show up and the deal busts wide open. There's the rest of them.
Yeah.
Let me go and make a speech.
Speech away, Lieutenant.
Well, all right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going downtown to the lab to see what the science boys may have dug out for me, but my cops stay here. Is that understood?
Sure.
Yes, Lieutenant.
All right, nobody leaves. It's clear?
What about me, Lieutenant?
Sooner you leave, the less trouble we're likely to get into.
Now, Lieutenant, you're beginning to sound like a lieutenant. No objection to my moseying around a little, is there?
No objection, provided you report your findings to Papa, and I'm Papa.
Yes, sir, Papa.
Well, bye now, everybody. Try to act like good little murderers.
Well, now, the first step in the moseying around department. Anybody hear the shot?
Oh, that would have been quite impossible, Mr. Chambers.
How do you know my name?
Miss Doyle told me.
And let Miss Doyle tell the rest. Why would it be impossible to hear a shot, Miss Doyle?
Because I've been soundproofing the house. It's a theatrical boarding house, you
yes,
see.
Yes, 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 yes. Step number two. Are all of you dressed as you've been dressed, say, for the last couple of hours?
Yes, sure. Well, yes, of course.
Of course we are.
Good. Now, step number three. Get your shoes off. All of you.
Oh, really?
Now, look here, old man. It's a rather high-handed procedure, don't you think?
Shoes off, all of you. Under the supervision of the good officer here, Mr. Cassidy. Now, come on, off, 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 off there. And lay them there on the table. Good, that's good, very good.
And what now, sir?
And now you all go upstairs, each of you, to your respective room. Come on, off you go, my barefooted brigade. Come on, let's go, let's go.
Really, a most high-handed procedure.
And so, under the rather astonished eyes of Parker's policeman, you do the old Sherlock. You examine the shoes. You feel them, you touch them, you bend them, and you put them back. Then you wriggle into your raincoat and you wave goodbye to the taciturn gentleman of the law. See you around, fellas. And remember the lieutenant's orders. Nobody comes, nobody goes, except me. And now you're walking in the rain, trying to think. An idea is beginning to glimmer in your mind, and you're waiting for it to catch fire. Then a block away, you see a subway station. And a fire in your head has started. You jog down the subway steps. But you're not going anywhere. You've got no train to catch. And downstairs, you see an object of interest. A tall section of public lockers. You go near and insert your dime. But you don't check a thing. Then you prance up the stairs and you make for the nearest tavern and a couple of drinks, but this time they have a purpose to ward off pneumonia because you're wet through and through. And then you're back in the boarding house and you're greeted.
Well, 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 the return of Sherlock Holmes.
Parker's got them all downstairs again, but none of them are wearing their shoes yet. My orders.
Look, my dear friend, I like my murder suspects wearing shoes, if it's all right with you.
It's not all right with me. Not yet, Lieutenant.
Boy, when a private eye goes nuts, it's a matter for the paddy wagon.
Look, I'm just trying to put two and two together, Lute.
You certainly got a crazy way of adding, boy.
I'm attempting to produce the murderer of Al Godino.
Well, produce away, detective. Pray don't let me interrupt.
Well, sir, first off, we've got
motive. 100,000 motives, all green, and all stuffed into a little black bag.
Right. Also, we've got a small but select group.
Ranted. So when do we produce some murder?
Gently, Lieutenant, gently, gently. Come here. Dig these shoes.
Jay, I'm a hipster. I dig these shoes the most.
Notice? They're all damp.
What did you expect them to be? Dry? It's pouring out, remember?
Contain yourself, Lieutenant.
I am contained.
All right, let's get back to the beginning. Mary Doyle called me on the phone. Purpose? To protect Al Godino's little black bag.
Yeah, and the killer heard her and had to act fast. He slugged her, then knocked off the opera singer, then clipped the bag all before you got here. How long did it take?
About 10 minutes.
Okay, so what's with the damp shoes?
Joan Bradley's figured to be damp.
And mine, didn't they? Didn't mine?
Why don't you say
that? No. He's right, Lieutenant. His figured to be damp, too. And so did Bill Craig's. They were all out in the rain. But not Mary Doyle.
What?
You weren't out of the house. Were you, Miss Doyle? That's what you told the Lieutenant, remember? Not for a minute, not you.
What are you trying to say?
I'm asking you to explain why were your shoes wet.
Now, look, you. You're not going to push me around with your smart-aleck private cop parlor tricks. Maybe the shoes are wet. So what? I got a leaky pipe in the kitchen. The floor is damp. Oh, well, it's a hot one. Explanations for wet shoes.
Look, your
brother.
Shoes are wet from the rain.
That's a lie.
Were you out in the rain, Miss Doyle?
Absolutely not.
Oh, yes, she was.
Can you prove it, Pete?
Certainly I can prove it.
But she's the one that called you. The one who was most worried about that opera singer and her lute.
Strictly a cover-up, Lieutenant. Let me do it right side up for you. First, she knocked off Al Godino up there with the door closed in a soundproof room. And then she called me.
Lie, lie, lie!
Either you be good, lady, or I'm going to have to put you under restraint. Let me get you straight, Pete. According to you, she sort of conked herself on the head. You found her like that, supposed to be unconscious.
And she made sure to leave the outside door unlocked so I could get in.
And you got here during that 10-minute period from the time she called.
That's when she got her shoesies all wet.
You're going to have to prove those statements, Mr. Wise Guy, because I'm going to sue you. I'm going to drag you into court and teach you a lesson. It's about time one of you guys got a lesson.
Shut up, lady. Will you please shut up? Now, wait a minute, Pete, about the shoes. She could have changed them, couldn't she?
No, she couldn't. They're lounging shoes that go with her outfit. If she changed the shoes, she'd have to change the entire getup. She simply didn't have the time. Remember? 10 minutes.
So?
So she wiped the shoes as best she could, which left them damp.
Yeah.
She had to work fast in those 10 minutes. While you were down in the lab with your bright boys, Lieutenant, I was out in the rain figuring angles.
What did you come up with?
A subway station.
What?
There's a subway station a block from here. Downstairs, they've got a flock of those dime parcel checkboxes. Now, that figured to be the closest drop. Remember, she was in a hurry, so she checked the little black bag.
That's a lie. Oh. Checkboxes have little keys. I've got no key. Search me. Search the house.
There'd be no key here.
Backing down, huh? Figured I'd break down under your phony third degree.
You want to know why?
Why what?
Why there's no key here?
Yeah. Why? Tell me why.
Because I've got it. See? Right here. In my hand.
What the heck is all this about?
She used the oldest gag in the world. Probably thought it was new because she dreamed it up. They all do.
Who all do?
Amateur criminals. Sure, she didn't keep the check key on a person. Too risky. Instead, she put it in an envelope and she mailed it to herself.
The old mailer rule.
It's a lie.
Miss Doyle, you made one mistake. Under certain circumstances, mail can be intercepted. And that's exactly what's been done. See this key? That's the final bit of evidence that's going to fasten you to the electric chair. For murder. The rest is easy. A bit of expert prodding from Parker and she breaks down and they cart her away. The police open that panel of lockers and find a little black bag. Downtown, she confesses that she mailed the check key to herself, care of an aunt in Brooklyn. And 1 hour later, you and Miss Joan Bradley are at your place, munching corned beef sandwiches and drinking beer. You've kissed her a couple of times, but you've gotten very little response. So you ask why.
Because when my mind is troubled, I can't concentrate on kissing.
But what's troubling you?
That malarkey about intercepting the United States mail?
Malarkey is precisely correct. Mary Doyle was a type who would fight back until you had her convinced. Even if they found the bag in that locker, they still have to tie it up with her. So, I had to dream up a ruse to convince her.
But where'd you get the key?
That wasn't the key. It was a key. But of exactly the same type, out of exactly the same group of checkboxes. I went there, I paid a dime, I checked nothing, and came away with the convincer.
Very good. Very good indeed.
Thank you.
And for all that work, not even a fee.
Well, everything isn't measured in dollars, my sweet.
You've got all the right answers. Come here.
Your mind still troubled?
No, sir. Not a trouble in the world.
Can you concentrate now?
Try. Find out. Pete, there's one more.
Quiet, please. Man at work.
And there you've had Crime and Peter Chambers. Dane Clark was starred as Peter Chambers. Crime and Peter Chambers Transcribed was created and written by Henry Kane. Bill Zuckert was heard as Lieutenant Parker with Bryna Rayburn and William Griffiths. It was directed by Fred Way. And this is Fred Collins inviting you to tune in next week, same time, same station, for Dane Clark in Crime and Peter Chambers.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
from Hollywood. It's time now for Bob Bailey as...
Johnny Deller.
Fred Wilkins at Northeastern Fidelity, Johnny.
Oh, hi, Fred.
I got a case for you. Remember the Alvin Summers embezzlement?
Sure, he took off with $75,000 about 6 months ago.
Right. We held the bond on him, so we're stuck with it.
So?
This morning a guy called from a little town on the west coast of Mexico, Santo Tomas. It was a bad connection, but I gathered he had some information on Summers and wanted somebody to go down there and talk to him. I nominated you.
Then he's expecting me, huh? What's his name?
I don't know.
Well, how do I contact him in Santo Tomas?
I'm afraid I don't know that either.
You mean I'm supposed to go looking for somebody whose name I don't even know? How come he's so coy?
I don't think it's a case of being coy, Johnny. Before we could get very far into the conversation, the connection was broken off at his end.
Okay, Fred, I'm on my way.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Deller. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Deller to the Home Office, Northeastern Fidelity and Bonding, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Alvin Summers matter. Item 1, $220, plane, train, and boat fare to Santo Tomas, Mexico. For a town trying to be a resort, Santo Tomas shouldn't be so hard to get to. The last lap was by far the worst, a creaky twice-a-week boat from Mazatlan. And I may be wrong, but it looked to me like the only outfit interested in making a resort out of Santo Tomas was the big new hotel up on a cliff overlooking the sea, the Playa del Mar. The rest of the town just didn't seem to care. It was a sleepy fishing village. A dilapidated pier, a long curving beach with the jungle crowding in on it, and a miscellaneous assortment of adobe shacks huddled here and there, sort of digging their feet into the ground. Even at a distance, the Playa del Mar looked too rich for my purpose, so I checked in at the other hotel. It was an old two-story job in town that I found after carefully detouring around a belligerent rooster scratching up a meal in the street outside. Once inside, I couldn't help feeling that the rooster was better off. It was small, dingy, and hot. I signed the beat-up ledger that passed for a register, and a little character wearing a ragged shirt with no collar, a big grin, and a baseball cap swooped down on me and grabbed my suitcase.
Right off the stairs, senor.
Okay. Are you the star of the Santo Tomas Nine or something?
Okay.
The baseball cap.
Oh, it's a first-class hotel here. I got to wear a uniform.
Oh, sure. Silly of me. Which way?
Follow me, senor. You come here to fish?
Not exactly.
My cousin has a very good boat to hire a ship.
Sorry.
Oh. Well, if you're here on just a vacation, I'll be glad to show you the scenic sights for a very small fee.
Hey, look, promoter, before you start making a career out of me, how about showing me my room?
Okay, senor. Here. It's a very nice room, no?
Oh, sure. Hey, look, can we get a little air in here?
Oh, see, I turn on the overhead fan. It's better, no?
No. Is a balcony out here?
Oh, see, with a beautiful view of the ocean, Senor Dollar.
Beautiful. The only thing I can see is the wall of that building across the alley.
Ah, but if you climb up on the railing and stand in the corner and look over the roof of the building, there in the distance you'll see the...
Beautiful. Look,
Benito, senor.
Benito, I gather that in addition to a few other assorted enterprises, you're the bellboy in this establishment.
I do everything.
Oh, must really be a strain.
Oh, see, I'm always straining.
Been in Santo Tomas long?
Si, senor. Too long.
Have you heard my name mentioned around town lately? Anybody asking for me?
No, senor.
Holy raffle. Oh, the door to the balcony.
It's nothing, senor. Only the fan.
What?
Well, when the fan is on, the door, it blows shut. You're jumpy, senor.
Huh?
See, you are jumpy.
Yeah, well, I'm in a good business for it, but, yeah. Tell me, did you ever hear the name Summers?
Summers? Senor, in Santo Tomas is always Summers.
Okay. I mean a man named Summers, Alvin Summers. Here's his picture. Take a look. Ever seen him before?
Senor, in this heat, it's a strain to use the memory.
Yeah, well, you think this might make you forget the heat?
Quien sabe, Senor Dolit. Might help.
Here.
Oh, $5 American. Gracias.
Now, how about it?
Si, senor. I have seen this man.
Here in Santa Tomas?
I think so.
Where? How long ago?
I don't remember, but I'll try to find out for you.
Okay, Benito. That bill I gave you, I've got a few more just like it, if you can locate the guy in this picture, Alvin Summers. Or if you can find anybody who's asking about me.
Senor, for that kind of money, I'll not only find him, I'll bring him to you on a silver platter.
Item 2 on expense account, $5 American to Benito the bellboy. Flying blind the way I was in this deal, I figured I needed all the help I could get. And who knows, Benito just might turn something. After he left, I stretched out on the rickety bed and tried to figure out a plan of operations. I had to make myself conspicuous if I wanted the man who'd called the home office to contact me. On the other hand, if Alvin Summers himself was in the vicinity, I'd have to be pretty inconspicuous to stand a chance of getting anywhere near him. Trying to do both at the same time might not be exactly easy. Yeah?
Dollar?
Well, yeah. Who are you?
Carson's the name, E.K. Carson, and I'm sure glad I found you, friend.
Hey, you the guy who telephoned and wanted to see me?
I sure am.
Well, my luck seems to be holding up pretty well.
Not too well, I hope.
Huh?
Yes, sir. As soon as I saw you check in, I phoned the desk clerk to ask who you were. I says to him, he looks like an American to me. See, I'm in room 10 downstairs.
Wait a minute. Desk clerk? I thought you meant that long-distance call.
Well, the reason I hope your luck's not too good, friend, I'm sure hoping to get you into a little cribbage game.
Cribbage?
You play, don't you?
No, I'm strictly the gin rummy type.
Oh, I could teach you, friend. Wouldn't take a jiffy.
Sorry, I thought you were somebody else.
Oh, I sure wish I could get you into a little game, friend. Gets mighty lonesome making the rounds of these small towns.
Are you in business here?
No, I'm a traveling man. Regional sales manager for Hold Tight Zippers.
Zippers? Down here?
Sure thing. All a matter of education. As I often say, business is where you find it. Why, half the world is just waiting to be zipped up. Great thought, ain't it?
Terrifying. Look, Mr. Carson, if you'll excuse me...
What about that cribbage game, friend?
Sorry, as I told
you...
Now,
I'll bet if you just learned to play the game, you'd find out it was a whale of a lot of fun.
I'll wait.
Well, then, why don't we have us a good talk about business?
Look, if you don't mind, I've got a few things to do around here, so...
Sure, sure, I know. To tell you the truth, I guess I'm just plain lonely. Daytimes aren't so bad when I'm out on the road, but... Nights, I don't seem to be able to find anyone to talk to. Now that you're here...
Yeah, well, maybe we can have a drink sometime.
Say, I'd sure like that. Then maybe we can get up a little game later.
Well, maybe. I ushered E.K. Carson, the cribbage king, politely but firmly out of the door. I'd figured him for the man who wanted to talk about Alvin Summers. But all he apparently had on his mind was cribbage and zippers. I ambled on downstairs into the cantina next door. I cut my way through the smoke to the bar and looked around. A few tired-looking characters at the tables, and over in one corner, a little fellow bent over a guitar, eyes closed, in a world all his own. Then I saw the girl, three stools down the bar from me. But when I looked up again after a drink, she was only one stool away.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome to Santa Tomas.
Thanks.
Really something, isn't he?
Hmm?
That guitar player. I saw you watching him.
Oh.
You know, those guys give me the creeps. They start playing and all of a sudden they're gone. Real far away. I don't think he even knows there's anybody else in here.
Lucky man, huh?
Yeah. It's funny. A cheap run-down bar like this. Nobody listening to him. Except us.
And he's playing like he's on a cloud.
Yeah. There's a flamenco singer like that up at the hotel. At night out on the terrace when she starts those wailing songs of hers. She gives me the creeps, too.
Up at the hotel, the Playa del Mar?
Yeah.
Well, he must be down here to see how the other half lives.
You mean to see if anybody lives in this town? I sure picked me a great spot for a vacation.
Pretty dull, huh?
Real. At least, it has been.
Oh? Say, do you know that guy over there?
The American at the corner table?
Yeah, the muscle man.
I sure don't.
You, certain?
Of course I am. Why?
Well, he's been staring at us.
Oh.
Never saw him before, huh?
Mm-mm. Of course, I've never been in here before. Maybe he's the bouncer.
He sure looks like he could qualify. Well.
Look, he's leaving.
Yeah, I guess we made him self-conscious.
I guess I'd better leave, too.
Where to,
Gloria.
Johnny.
I think I'll go back up to the hotel and change.
Then what?
I don't know. There's a moon tonight.
Got a date?
Mm-hmm.
Me?
Mm-hmm.
When?
On the terrace. Half an hour.
She left, and I sat there a drink or two, thinking her over and wondering what her angle was. I was pretty sure she was interested in me for more than my manly charms. And it occurred to me that it might not be too unpleasant finding out what was on her mind. Especially if it could help me locate an embezzler named Alvin Summers. I went up to my room to change. When I got there, I found I had company.
Close the door.
Well, my friend from the bar downstairs.
I said close the door.
Okay. Why the gun?
Turn around. Face the wall.
Okay.
Hands against the wall.
Hey, look, what are you...
Shut up.
Well, if you're looking for my gun, it's under my left arm.
Thanks. Now turn around.
So what's this all about?
That's just what you're going to tell me. What's your name?
Johnny Dollar.
I'll bet.
Cross my heart.
We'll try again. What's your name?
I told you, Johnny Dollar.
You can think of a better one than that.
Wise up, Buster. It sounds so phony, it's got to be legitimate. And speaking of names, what's yours?
I'm asking the questions. You're answering.
Okay, we'll play it your way.
What are you doing down here, Dollar?
Look, I'll make a deal with you. You tell me why you want to know, and maybe I'll be...
Don't play games with me, Dollar. Next time you get more than the barrel of the gun.
Hey, look, I don't know what this is all about.
Okay, we'll cut out the question and answer routine. I know why you're here.
Oh?
So forget it, Dollar. Drop the whole thing and beat it.
Maybe I like it around here.
But you won't like it around here anymore, Dollar. You'll learn to hate it.
You and that gun put up a pretty convincing argument.
I'll give it to you once more, Dollar. Slow and easy so you can get it this time. Go on away. Don't ever come back. If you don't go now, you will never go.
There'll be another exciting episode in the story of the Alvin Summers matter tomorrow.
Tomorrow night, a threesome on a moonlit beach. A beautiful girl, me, and a guy with a knife. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Robert Reif, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking. From Hollywood, it's time now for Bob Bailey as...
Johnny Dollar.
Where have you been, Johnny? I thought we had a date.
Oh, Gloria. I'm sorry, baby. I've already had a date.
What?
Remember the big gorilla at the corner table downstairs in the cantina? The one who kept staring at us?
Sure. What about him?
Well, he was waiting for me in my room just now. He didn't like the way I parted my hair, I guess, so he changed it with a gun barrel.
Johnny, are you all right?
Aside from a lump or two, sure.
Sounds to me like you need a little nursing, Johnny.
I always do.
It's beautiful out on the terrace tonight.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Santo Tomas, Mexico. Expense account submitted by special investigator Johnny Dollar to the Home Office, Northeastern Fidelity and Bonding, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an account of additional expenses during my investigation of the Alvin Summers embezzlement case. Item 4, $3 American to Eduardo Moreno, M.D., the doctor who dressed the assorted lumps and bruises I'd collected from the strong arm who seemed quite convinced that I should leave town. For a moment, I figured he could be the man who was to contact me with information as to the whereabouts of Alvin Summers, the embezzler. But as it turned out, all he wanted to say to me was goodbye, and he said it very convincingly. But Gloria was waiting for me. She definitely seemed to want to get better acquainted. And although I didn't know what her angle was, I figured it might be fun finding out. I left the joint where I was staying and went up to the Playa del Mar, the big expensive hotel overlooking the sea. There was a terrace with some tables and a flamenco singer wailing at the moon. Gloria was at one of the tables. Hi.
Johnny, what in the world happened to you when I talked to you over the phone?
I'm sorry I'm late, Gloria. You can see by my face I ran into kind of a rough detour.
You all right now?
Yeah.
Johnny, you said it was that man who kept staring at us in the bar where we met?
That's the one. Real charming fella. Muscles, too.
What happened?
I went to my room to change before coming up here. He was waiting for me, worked me over. The general idea was I should leave Santo Tomas in a hurry.
But why?
I don't know. Yet. But somewhere along the line, I'm going to make it a point to find out. Cigarette?
Thanks. Well, looks like things are picking up a little.
How so?
I told you I'd found this place pretty dull so far, but now, with you getting beat up and told to get out of town, it's beginning to sound a little more interesting.
Well, I could do with more dullness and a few less bruises, believe me.
You must be down here on a lot more than just a vacation, Johnny.
Oh, I don't know. A lot of people apparently come down here to this town just for a vacation. That's why you told me you came here, remember?
There's only one difference.
What's that, Gloria?
I really am on a vacation, and I don't think you are.
Oh?
You're not the Santo Tomas type.
Why not?
Mexico City, maybe. Havana, maybe. But not Santo Tomas. No, I think you came down here to meet somebody. Or to find somebody.
Okay. Suppose I did. Who would I be looking for?
If you don't know, how would I?
Looking for, you, maybe?
Oh, now that's the nicest thing that's been said to me all day. If you are, it's too bad I didn't know it sooner.
Why?
It would have made this town a little more bearable. Waiting.
Or maybe you've been looking for me.
Well, let's not be blunt here. I thought I was being so subtle.
You have been looking for me?
Well, I must admit I've been looking for someone who's alive in this town. Of course, what I should say is that I've always been looking for you, that I...
Okay. I guess that leaves me right where I started from.
Hmm?
Skip it. So, we're just two happy people on a vacation.
Yeah. Okay, Johnny.
Okay. Hey, that music. That the flamenco singer you were telling me about?
Mm-hmm. Sounds pretty weird, doesn't she? Well, I like it. You know something?
Hmm?
Sounds even weirder from down below on the beach.
Oh?
Like to see for yourself?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'd like to.
Well, give me a minute.
What's the matter?
Speaking of people staring at you.
That guy again? Where is he?
No, it's a little man this time. Over at the end of the terrace, see him?
Oh, that's Benito.
Who?
The bellboy at my hotel. Hey, excuse me a minute. Be right back.
Sure.
Senor Dollar.
Hiya, Benito.
The desk clerk told me you'd come up here.
What's on your mind?
You told me you'd pay me money if I could get some information for you.
That's right. I want to know if anybody's been trying to contact me. You turn up anything?
Not about that, senor, but the picture you showed.
The one of Alvin Summers?
Si. I told you I thought I'd seen him here in Santo Tomas. Now I'm sure of it.
Good boy.
Tonight I talked to a friend of mine. I described Senor Summers to him. He told me he used to work for him as a houseboy.
Good. Did he tell you where Summers is now?
No, he could not tell me that.
Couldn't or wouldn't?
I do not know, senor, but he tell me where the house is that Summers lived in.
Where is it?
You could not find it, senor. It's in from the beach in the jungle a little way. I would have to take you there.
All right, let's go.
Well, not now. I'm supposed to be on duty back at the hotel. I must get down there at once before the hotel clerk finds out I'm gone.
When do you get off duty?
At midnight. I'll come to your room then and take you to Senor Summers' house.
Okay, midnight. Good boy, Benino.
a real good boy, senor?
Hmm? Oh, yeah. Here.
Oh, gracias, senor. But you should not have come here.
Now, look, I've already had one guy tell me to leave town tonight. Don't you start.
No, I mean you should not have come here to the Playa del Mar.
Oh, why not?
Because after you pay your check here, senor, you'll not have any more money left to pay me with.
Well, don't worry about it, Benita. I'll bully it through somehow. See you later.
Si, senor.
Well, hello, Dollar.
Oh, no.
Carson, E.K. Carson, remember?
Sure, the zipper salesman. What brings you up here?
Oh, same thing as you, friend. Out doing a little stepping.
I thought you told me down at the hotel that you figured half the world was just waiting to be zipped up. How can you afford to take the time off?
All work and no play, friend. Haven't you heard?
Yeah, well, I have a date. See you later, Carson.
I'm still waiting to get you into a cribbage game, friend.
Good. That's just what you do.
You mean play cribbage?
No, I mean keep waiting. When I got back to the table, Gloria was gone. I looked around, no sign of her. This I didn't get, and I didn't like. Why would she pull a disappearing act on me now?
Johnny.
Then I spotted her, just off the terrace on the path that led to the cabanas on the beach. I went over. She was carrying a scarf and wearing a one-piece bathing suit. The scarf looked bigger.
Hi.
Well.
I thought as long as we were going down to the beach, we might as well go for a swim.
Why not? Be right with you. Item 5 on expense account, $7 for one pair of swimming trunks, 5 for the trunks and $2 to get the hotel shopkeeper out of bed to sell them to me. After all, I figured I ought to stay close to Gloria. That's the way she seemed to want it, and I wanted to know why. She could have some information on the whereabouts of Alvin Summers I could use. Well, she might.
Oh, that was fun.
Yeah.
Come on, there's a place over against the rocks at the foot of the cliff.
Okay. What do we do now? Build a fire and roast marshmallows?
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't bring any marshmallows.
Oh, it's just as well. I'm strictly the hot dog and beer type anyway.
Here we are. This is my place, Johnny. I come down here almost every night.
That's nice.
I told you there was a moon tonight.
Yeah.
And the flamenco singer. Music comes right down the rocks to us.
Doesn't she ever get tired?
Doesn't seem to.
What's she singing about? Do you know?
Uh-huh. It's about a man in jail in a little town. His sweetheart tosses a rose to him through the bars. It drives him crazy.
Cheerful.
There aren't any walls around you, Johnny.
Oh?
The only trouble is, I don't have a rose.
Well, who needs a rose?
Oh, Johnny. Darling.
Gloria, look, I...
You were saying...
You know something? I forgot what it was.
Good. Let's keep it that way, darling.
Hold it.
So who's thinking of moving?
Shh.
What is it?
They're in the moonlight coming along the beach.
Two men?
Yeah. Take a good look at the one in front.
Johnny.
Yeah. The one who worked me over in my hotel room tonight. And it looks like he brought along a stooge with a machete.
They're looking for you.
Look, get around behind the rock here, then back up the path to the hotel.
No,
quiet,
Johnny.
Get going.
I'm not
going to
leave
you.
Please, Johnny, please, don't go out there. Now, stay out of sight. They can't see us here in the shadows.
Gloria, sooner or later, I got a little matter to settle with that big ape, and might as well be sooner.
No, please, I don't want you to get hurt again, Johnny. I'm not going to leave you.
Okay, come on. Let's shift around to the other side of this rock and keep it quiet.
Can you see them?
Keep your head down.
Maybe it's farther up the beach. Now, what's the water?
That was close. Too close.
Yeah.
Johnny, are you in some kind of trouble?
Not yet. You seem pretty concerned about me.
I am.
You sure that was why you didn't want me to tangle with him?
Of course.
You don't know the guy, huh?
I told you I didn't. Why?
Oh, I was just wondering if maybe he was a friend of yours and didn't want me moving in on him.
Johnny, you're talking crazy. I've never seen him in my life before today in the bar of your hotel. I told you I didn't want you to get hurt again. I mean it. Maybe this will prove it.
Well, that's a pretty strong argument. Look, Gloria, I hate to, believe me, but I've got to leave.
What?
Must be almost midnight.
So?
So there's something I got to take care of.
Oh, fine.
I know. I'm sorry.
Pretty strange vacation you're on, Johnny.
Yeah. So, my timing was terrible. But I had to meet Benito, the bellboy, in my hotel room at midnight to find out more about Alvin Summers' whereabouts. I walked Gloria back up to her hotel and headed for mine. It was a couple of minutes after 12 when I got there. I walked into my room and started to reach for the light switch. Then I froze. The moonlight was streaming in through the louvered door to the balcony, and I could see a silhouette against it. Somebody was out on that balcony, crouching against the door. Slowly, carefully, I eased over to it, then suddenly jerked it open. Benito. And I knew I wasn't going to get any more information about Alvin Summers out of him. After all, you can't do much talking when your throat's been cut.
There'll be another exciting episode in our story of the Alvin Summers matter tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Well, there are some people you just wouldn't want to meet in a dark alley. But sometimes it can't be helped. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Robert Reif, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Going to do it for Case Closed for today. I hope you enjoyed the shows. I'll continue the Yours Truly Johnny Dollar next week. But in the meantime, there's more old-time radio at relicradio.com. Past episodes of this show and links to everything else Relic Radio. All the other shows all the other websites, all the other everything. It's all at relicradio.com, along with a link to donate if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. I appreciate it if you're able to help out. Thanks to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. Be back next Wednesday with more Case Closed.